This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. A New York Times investigation claims that corporations like American Express are effectively banning customers from filing class action lawsuits thanks to arbitration clauses buried deep in their contracts. Companies often prefer arbitration because it is typically cheaper than litigation. However, consumer advocates say class action lawsuits are a key tool in holding corporations accountable. We want to look at the Times investigation and discuss the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau's recent announcement that it may try eliminating lawsuit waivers in consumer contracts. And joining us from New York City is Jessica Silver Greenberg. She's a business reporter of the New York Times, and she co-wrote the investigative series on credit card companies and their use of arbitration clauses. And Jessica Silver Greenberg, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you. Let's sort of begin by some background here. I mean, essentially, the series points out that corporations, I hesitate to use this word, but it's probably the apt one, conspire to ban class action lawsuits through these arbitration clauses, and did so largely by a kind of engineering from Wall Street and from those who were to benefit, particularly like credit card companies.
So I won't go so far as to say conspiring, but I will say that one of the things that was fascinating for us as we were doing this reporting was to look at the real concerted effort, what I would call a kind of legal coup that went into engineering a way to prevent all kinds of lawsuits, but in particular to block class action lawsuits. So the way that it worked was it's pretty ingenious if you think about it. You embed a clause in a contract that no one reads to begin with in the fine print. And in that clause, it says you have agreed to go to arbitration in lieu of court. And so some of the clauses are more explicit. They say things like you can't file a class action or you're giving up your right to a jury trial. But what we found was many people, until they actually have a problem, it's not something, if they even notice the arbitration clause, it's not something that is bothersome to them.
And really, when you say engineered or well-planned or ingenious, it had to do largely with a couple of Supreme Court cases that didn't get a lot of attention, one in 2011, one in 2013.
They didn't. So the culmination of this kind of planning was with these two Supreme Court decisions. The first was in 2011, as you say, and the second one was in 2013. The second one is pretty fascinating, at least in my mind, because I think it's it's a California case, which is interesting in and of itself, given where you guys are. But it begins around a restaurant owner named Alan Carlson, and he's the owner of a small Italian restaurant in Oakland. And he finds
his Italian colors, in fact.
Italian colors, right. So he says he's paying 30% more than he pays to Visa or MasterCard. He pays 30% more in swipe fees whenever a customer pays with plastic to American Express. And he joins together with a number of other small business owners, and they bring suit. And they file under the Sherman Act. So, you know, it's a really seminal law, and it's a law that prevents monopolies. That's the idea. It's an antitrust law. And so they file this case, but they file as a class, and American Express invokes the arbitration clauses in their contracts and says you can't file as a group. And this kind of wends its way through the courts. And one of the big arguments that the merchants make, or the lawyers for the merchants make, is unless this group files as a class action, unless they're able to pool their resources to pay for expert analysis to prove their case and to help shoulder what can really amount to high legal costs in their lawsuit, they can't afford to enforce their rights under the federal antitrust law. And so some lower courts agree with them and refuse to enforce the arbitration clause with this class waiver. So this case goes all the way to the Supreme Court. And the question is it's really a duel between these two laws, the Federal Arbitration Act and then the Sherman Act. And the question is, you know, the Federal Arbitration Act, which enshrines arbitration, can you insist on arbitration and can you ban a class action if doing so means there's no real way to enforce your rights under the antitrust law.
We're talking, and by the way, with Jessica Silver Greenberg, business reporter of the New York Times. I just want to get that in. Please finish, Jessica.
No problem. So I'll wrap up. Basically, the Supreme Court says arbitration clauses can ban class actions even if a class action is the only realistic way to enforce your rights under the law. And it was a pretty monumentous decision, as was the one, 2 years earlier.
Well, we're at the state now, I should say the status now, where you've got these arbitration clauses buried in contracts of all kinds. It's difficult to get a credit card, to shop online, to, as you point out in the article, even get cable or internet or rent a car, get a job, put a relative in a nursing home with the possibility even of class action suit, because the arbitration clauses are there and they've become in many ways ubiquitous. And yet, since you mentioned the case in Oakland, the Italian Colors case, there was an article in Forbes they were talking about the attorney in that case, who they said his specialty is, suing credit card companies. And many of these companies come back with a rejoinder that there are a lot of lawyers out there who are sue crazy or are putting forward frivolous lawsuits. And the result is they've got a kind of, I think somebody from Citibank called it, nuclear weapon against companies.
Mm-hmm. That is the argument against class actions. But the counterpoint to that, first of all, is that if you look at actual academic studies of plaintiffs' lawyers, let me back up. Some people, when they say, they assail class actions, and what they say is, they only result in small relief for consumers. I think everyone or many of your listeners can relate to kind of getting something in the mail that says, you got $6 back because you've been enrolled in a class action lawsuit and there is a settlement. So $6 doesn't seem like a lot of money. It's certainly not going to revolutionize your life heal the wrong that you may have suffered. And it may seem like a small amount of money. But to start with, if you take that $6 and you multiply it over the tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of people who have all been impacted, that's a lot of money for the company. And then on top of that, those class actions act, what law enforcement would say, they act as a deterrent. So if you have a class action lawsuit, companies are less likely to do bad practices. And it's interesting because in our lawsuit, I saw the Forbes article, and it's a very particular perspective. But if you look, there was a letter, for example, that 16 attorneys general wrote to the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. And what they said is, if you get rid of class actions, you deprive us of a really valuable tool, both to spot patterns of corporate wrongdoing and to address patterns of corporate abuse. And so I think focusing on the plaintiff's lawyers is a distraction.
Well, certainly banning of class action suits disables all kinds of consumer challenges, and in fact, to some pretty serious kinds of misconduct, predatory lending and wage theft and discrimination, just a whole range of things. But you do hear this argument that the plaintiff lawyers, some of them, just do this to get a big payday in settlements.
Right. There is definitely that argument. But I think, you mentioned wage theft, and I think the wage theft thing is particularly powerful because here you have many wage theft cases are brought under the Fair Labor Standards Act. It's a federal law that entitles individual workers to a fair wage, and it's supposed to guard against discriminatory and unfair business practices. And the Fair Labor Standards Act, what it does is it enables workers to band together while they're still working at the place and to sue under the name of – to file, form a class action under the name – the named plaintiff being someone who no longer works there. Because if you think about it, let's say I'm working at Applebee's, as we saw in our article, and I believe that Applebee's is fundamentally underpaying me. They're not paying me a minimum wage. I can't afford, and I might be scared, of suing under my own name because doing so basically puts a target on my head. So the class action mechanism in that case, that is meant to protect workers who otherwise would have no recourse. So it's a really important tool, regardless of whether plaintiff's lawyers get a piece of whatever the ultimate settlement is, to enforce federal law. And in the antitrust context, in the Sherman Act context, the argument of the merchants, and again, regardless of who was representing them, was we cannot protect our rights to be free of a monopoly. We cannot break up monopolies unless we file a class action. So by depriving us of that ability to file a class action, we are then subject to monopoly, to a monopoly. And I think that's a very powerful argument. And one that, you know, even in that case, in the American Colors case, what the Forbes article didn't point out was that there was an amicus brief, so a friend of the court brief, that was filed by the Justice Department. And the Justice Department said that class actions are a really important tool, again, in preventing monopolies. So, again, I think it's a little bit – I think it's beside the point.
Well, these arbitrations in lieu of the possibility of class action or to shield from class action, actually – The fact of the matter is, I think you point this out in the article, most people drop their claims and they don't opt for arbitration, even when they know about it. And arbitration really favors the companies. Certainly wanted to at least enlighten our listeners to that fact. I also want to enlighten you about the fact that you can participate in this discussion. In fact, we welcome your calls and emails if you have questions or comments. We're talking with Jessica Silver Greenberg, who is a business reporter for The New York Times, and she co-wrote the investigative series on credit card companies and their use of arbitration clauses. And you can join us now at our toll-free number. It's 866-733-6786. Again, feel free to join the program at our toll-free number, whether you're listening on radio, internet, or Sirius satellite, 866-733-6786. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. Many ways by which you can be a part of the program. And let me go right to our call. Eric, you're first up. Good morning.
Yes, good morning, Michael. Always thank you for your wonderful shows. I listen to them every day, and I'm a contributor to the program. Michael, I'm just calling basically to say that, you know, I understand, and I think people have to understand where corporations are coming from to protect themselves. Attorneys really, in this country, we have 70% of the attorneys in the world in this country, and we're only 2-3% of the population. Lawsuits are all over the place. And really, the consumer making $5 or $6, sure, if you multiply that by millions of people, it's a lot of money for the companies. But who's really making all the money from these class action lawsuits? I'd love to see how much money these corporations, the attorney corporations are making, these partnerships, who advertise on TV. I mean, I'm so sick and tired of seeing all these ads on TV every single day. If you're taking Xarelto, if you're taking testosterone, if your joint is off here and there, call us. We care about you and your loved one. I mean, don't people see what's going on behind the scenes here? Attorneys are making windfall profits from these situations. The prices of all these things are being passed on to consumers, and attorneys are making all the money. What's this $5 or $6 thing for every single person? Yeah, I get those in the mail all the time. Here's your $5 or $4. It's ludicrous. I'd like to see how much attorneys are making. Are they willing to drop their contingency fees down to 5% maybe instead of making 30% on these things and settling these things? It's simple extortion of money from corporations.
Well, Eric, I hear certainly your anger at this. And Jessica Silver Greenberg, you know, you see these cases, and indeed, from time to time, where maybe consumers, one after another, getting, as he suggests, $5, $6, but attorneys raking in millions.
Well, first of all, there's a couple of things. I wanted to address his other point because I don't really have that much time. The idea that class action lawsuits are driving up the cost of goods and services to the everyday consumer, that's a little bit of a I know it's a widely held belief. There's very little proof of that. And let me tell you something that I found interesting. So the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau studied whether companies pass on the savings that they get from using arbitration. So arbitration would address, as the listener says, you know, what companies see as abusive lawsuits. But that doesn't actually result, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau found, in lower prices for consumers. So I think, you know, before we rail against the class action attorneys, I think we need to kind of look at whether, in fact, those so-called savings are passed on. And again, it's not about the individual dollar amounts. It's about changing companies' practices.
And let me thank Eric for the call. We'll go right to another caller. Mark, that's you. You're on with us. Good morning.
Good morning, Michael. I just wanted to say that class actions are our only enforcement mechanism in civil law. You have a company like Chevrolet, GM, that had knowingly killed, for lack of a better word, a lot of people. There's no law against that. There's no criminal law to hold them accountable. Those people aren't going to go to jail. But if they, you know, if they cheated on their emissions test, they would, because there's a law against that. So this is the only way that everyday people can help enforce good conduct and fair conduct by corporations. It's also nothing to do with personal injury, as the other caller said, by the way.
Yeah,
that's right.
Against corporations.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is the only enforcement mechanism there is.
Yeah, Mark.
It's a very important point.
I thank you for the point. We'll go to more callers. I'm sorry, Jessica, you wanted to add something?
Oh, no. I mean, I think the caller is very
he's
right to point out, frankly, that personal injury lawsuits should not be confused with class action lawsuits. They're a very different thing.
Could you give us a little notion of this Consumer Financial Protection Bureau's recent announcement that it may indeed attempt to eliminate lawsuit waivers in consumer contracts?
Yes. So in October, the Bureau proposed it's an outline of rules. They're still in their very early stages. But what they said was the companies that they oversee, the industries that they oversee, which would include credit card companies and other financial service companies, the proposed rule would prevent these companies from including class action waivers in their arbitration clauses. And I should point out, too, and this gets a tiny bit in the weeds, this is less on the rules, when state court judges were striking down, as I said, these arbitration clauses for being, you know, unfair because they acted basically as a get-out-of-jail-free card for companies, they were not objecting to arbitration. They were objecting to individual arbitration. So, you know, if the point is that companies were not they were banning people from joining together in arbitration as well. So that's I think it's a very important point because it moves away from the idea of a class action lawsuit. It's simply, can you form a class even in arbitration? And the answer from corporations is no.
And we go to more of your calls. Doug, you're on the air on Forum. Good morning.
Good morning, and thank you very much for covering this topic. I'm with the Teamsters Union. And we had a bill this year, AB 465, that would have prohibited employers from requiring workers to sign an arbitration agreement as a condition of employment. And we got the bill to the governor's desk. Unfortunately, it was vetoed. So I was wondering if you could comment on how widespread you believe this practice to be of requiring workers to basically sign away their rights just to get a job.
Yeah, Jessica Silver Greenberg.
It's very widespread. The bill that you're describing, I watched it closely as well. And I think it was profoundly disappointing for a lot of advocates of workers' rights that Governor Brown didn't sign it into law. You know, I have no position on it, but it's widespread. What you're describing is very widespread. I mean, from our research in this story, I mean, all different kinds of retailers and huge companies require their workers to sign arbitration clauses as a condition of getting a job. And when it comes down to it, I mean, one of the things that came up in the discussion with the Philadelphia judge, Judge Burl Schiller, he said, when the choice is between signing an arbitration clause and not getting a job, you know, there's actually no choice at all. And I think what you're describing is it's a difficult conundrum, because is it really a choice when you can either turn down a job or sign this clause?
Let me thank you, Doug, for the call. I want to get as many of your calls on as we can. Let me go next to Milbrae. Richard, welcome.
Thank you. I think that the series is very crucial to expose a huge problem. Corporate greed in the United States is completely out of control. And one of the few mechanisms to stop corporate executives and boardrooms from ripping people off is the fear that someday they may have justice in a courtroom. But that fear has now gone away because of these horrible decisions by the Supreme Court. So whether it's a question of not fixing a defective ignition switch and people die, or banks reversing the order in which ATM bills charges are calculated so they hit you unfairly with huge fees, the only way to stop that is the fear that justice will someday occur in a courtroom. And now they don't have that fear. So, access to justice is a uniquely American solution to a uniquely American out-of-control corporate greed system.
Well, I thank you for the call, Richard. Glad to have your opinion. And what was interesting in reading the series you did, Jessica, to me was, I used the word conspired before, and I said I used it advisedly, and you said perhaps it's too strong a word. But there was a good deal of engineering, let's say, between not only corporations and banks and large companies, but the Chamber of Commerce also played a significant role in this.
Yes. Well, the Chamber of Commerce has been very upfront about seeing class action lawsuits as a real scourge on businesses. And so they have spent, millions and millions and millions of dollars to cast class actions as a boon for plaintiff's lawyers and as an abuse of the legal system.
Yeah, I'm looking at a Facebook comment by Juan who says, don't do business with the company if you don't like the policy. Of course, what if you don't have the option?
And let's say like phone companies, a cell phone service. Most cell phone providers require arbitration clauses. So you could decide to not use a cell phone, but it's tricky.
Yeah, I want to read just a few more emails. A listener writes, one goal of the arbitration clause is to avoid expensive attorney fees. Therefore, perhaps the suit should be allowed to proceed if the plaintiff agrees to pay the company's attorney fees should the plaintiff lose. Secondly, if these clauses are expressed in the same language, could collusion be implied? And Bill says there's an assumption that arbitration always favors a defendant, i.e. the bank or credit card. Isn't there equal justice for the plaintiffs using arbitration? As I said before, your article seemed to do some spate work in terms of pretty much showing that arbitration does favor companies.
So in the class action context, one of the things that we have to look at is it certainly matters very deeply whether arbitration is skewed towards companies or not, and our reporting suggests that it is. But you kind of need to start a little earlier and look at whether or not people are even going. And one of the profound issues with arbitration is that no one is going for small dollar disputes.
Well, they're buried in the contracts too. That's a real problem. We've kind of alluded to that.
That's true. Yeah. That's true. But then I also think, there is I think it speaks more to, again, the kind of function of a class action. You might not be able to, as an individual, go spend the time and money or even the time to sort out a dispute on your own. But if you believe that what you have experienced is a practice that has been widespread and impacts a lot of people, then, you have another vehicle.
And we'll have another caller. Ethan, join us. You're on.
Yes, hi. I wanted to say it's a great discussion, but it sort of seems like there's two extremes on either side. One, you have people wanting to get rid of class action lawsuits, and the other is there's a real abuse, and there's a lot of junk class action lawsuits. So maybe there could be a middle ground achieved by limiting trial lawyers' fees somewhat. And then secondly, I wanted to say it should be mentioned that trial lawyers and unions are the two largest contributors to California politicians. So I think Governor Brown actually showed some real courage by vetoing that.
All right, Ethan, I appreciate your comment. Let it stand and go to another caller. Steve, thanks for waiting. Join us.
Thank you. I would like to point out that, or I'd like to start by saying that I'm not against all class action lawsuits, but I would like to point out that the U.S. Department of Justice does have an antitrust division that their primary focus is to enforce the Sherman Act in both civil and criminal cases. And when your guest discusses the lack of potential punitive impact for anti-competitive practices, she leaves out this component. And oftentimes, trial attorneys and plaintiff's lawyers piggyback on these DOJ investigations and end up enriching themselves on taxpayer dollars.
Well, caller's right, isn't he, Justin?
No, he's not. No? There is a civil and a criminal enforcement division of the DOJ. But if you look at the brief that – a couple of things. First of all, if you look at the brief that the Justice Department filed, they see civil lawsuits, class action lawsuits for violations of the Sherman Act to be a critical tool in their arsenal. And if you look at the patterns and again, this is something that the CFPB did. They looked at class action lawsuits and government enforcement actions, both by the Justice Department, state attorneys general, and they saw that in two-thirds of the time in this subset of cases that they looked at, class action attorneys actually went first. So it wasn't the Justice Department piggybacking on plaintiff's attorneys. It was, for to use the caller's construction, the Justice Department piggybacking on plaintiff's attorneys.
Now, let me thank the caller. And I just want to read an email from a listener here because it gets into personal experience with this kind of thorny subject that we've taken up this segment. Listener writes, I inherited a trust from my deceased father. In order to get control of the money, I had to sign a contract agreeing to binding arbitration and agreeing that the arbiters would not have to state the reason for their decision. Attorneys I consulted said I had no option. The reason the arbiters do not state their decision is so no precedent is set. Well, I think we've managed to at least cover the subject in a way that will make people aware of what's going on here, and I really do recommend the articles. In fact, we'll put them on our website for you to read by Jessica Silver Greenberg and her co-investigator. And thank you so much for joining us and spending this time with us.
Thank you.
Again, Jessica Silver Greenberg is business reporter for the New York Times, who co-wrote the investigative series on credit card companies and their use and arbitration clauses. Another hour of Forum ahead. We're going to meet Judy Collins, who is, well, she's a new, she has a new CD, and she also has been at it for over 50 years. We'll talk about her life and times and hear some of her music. Stay tuned. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schremm and Maria Minetti Schremm, founders of Clos Pegas Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.